and welcome to Macro Minutes. During each episode, we'll be joined by RBC Capital Markets experts to provide high conviction insights on the latest developments in financial markets and the global economy. Please listen to the end of this recording for important disclosures.
Welcome back to Macro Minutes. My name is Peter Shafrick, and this edition is labeled The Cat is Out of the Bag and Now Amongst the Pigeons. We are recording on Wednesday, 9th of April, or maybe we should say the day that the US tariffs take effect and are causing wild swings in almost all markets. Equity markets have been falling sharply and fixed income markets initially rallied, as one would expect. Yet, lately, led by the US Treasury markets, they reversed course and specifically 30-year yields rose quite sharply as yield curves power steepened. Credit spreads sharply wider. Central banks are priced for near-term action, although most policymakers that have spoken have remained very reluctant to embrace market urgency. In FX markets, the US dollar has been on the back foot, but overall volatility pales in comparison to other markets. To make sense of these moves, I'm joined by Blake Gwynn, who will help us understand what is happening in the US and the US Treasury market specifically, and Elsa Lignos, our head of FX strategy. So let's get right into it. Blake, maybe let's start at the beginning. And to use our title, The Cat is Out of the Bag, and this escalation in tariffs has been far more than anyone really expected.
Yeah, thanks, Peter. So look, I mean, I think what we have been doing up to this point, or the way we've kind of been thinking about things, is that basically the bark, if you will, is going to be worse than the kind of sustained bite from the administration. So a pretty optimistic base case that we've kind of been baking in on tariffs. Now, obviously, that's very low conviction. It's very hard to tell where this is going. I often tell people, you know, we have very little comparative advantage in calling, you know, what Trump is going to do, you know, even on a day-to-day or week-to-week basis, but, you know, much less so when we're kind of thinking 3 to 6 months out. And I don't feel so bad about that because, honestly, if you look at a lot of the administration officials themselves, even they don't really seem to know where all of this is headed. So it's been very hard to make kind of a high consensus call on, you know, what the path forward is going to be for tariffs. So I think the way we've been kind of thinking about it is that you need to kind of lean towards whatever the current status is as a base case and then treat anything, anything beyond that as basically a risk to that base case. So like I said, up to now, we've generally taken the more optimistic approach, which is that the tariffs that were actually physically in place were relatively low. And I think our view in that kind of optimistic base case was basically borne out by what we saw in the early stages of Mexico-Canada negotiations where, you know, deadlines were rolled back. You saw exemptions, you know, these kind of major exemptions made to what was actually going to be imposed, which kind of got to our point, which is that, you know, a lot of this would be kind of threat and back and forth. And at the end of the day, what actually sticks and lasts for a long time would be relatively light. But in that same vein, now that we have, you know, quote unquote, flipped the switch on these Liberation Day tariffs, you know, these very broad, very, very deep, much deeper than, or much higher than I think markets were expecting. Now that the switch has officially been flipped, I think we really have to start treating these tariffs that have been announced and turned on, you know, that we have to treat that as kind of a base case now going forward. And, you know, I still lean towards the idea that there's probably going to be some rollback from where we're at right now. There will be some, you know, quote unquote deals struck, you know, to roll them back on various economies, you know, so I still think that some of that comes down, but we have to start treating those things as optimistic risks to our more pessimistic base case right now. So I think the way we're kind of thinking about things are that these tariffs are going to last for some amount of time.
Blake, you've had a long held view that the Fed wasn't going to cut again this year. And obviously, given what you've just said, assume that's changed. So tell me how that view is evolving.
Yeah, that's certainly evolving. And I think, you know, as you just kind of heard me describe with the base case around the tariffs, it so goes for the Fed as well. I think that more optimistic base case kind of made sense before we saw the announcement and kind of full implementation of these Liberation Day tariffs. And if you were assuming like we did that, you know, a lot of this would be kind of back and forth threats, then I still saw a scenario where the Fed was on hold through the rest of this year. But now as we kind of shift that base case and start thinking about these tariffs lasting for a while, it's hard to see the Fed not cutting this year. So we are really kind of rethinking that path later in the year. You know, so certainly that zero cut base case, it looks to be shifting. The one thing I will say about that Fed view, though, you know, they are still somewhat handcuffed by the inflation outlook. Even before we got this announcement on the tariffs, or even before we started implementing or talking about tariffs, the inflation outlook wasn't fantastic from the Fed's perspective. In Q4, things really didn't improve in the way that they had hoped. The initial data we're getting out of Q1 has not exactly been great for the Fed. And that's, again, before you start layering over any impacts from the tariffs. So the Fed was already in a bit of a problematic spot and inflation. Now you start thinking about, you know, whether it's the direct kind of pass-through of tariff costs to consumers, but also, you know, potential spillover effects, longer increases that take a little bit longer to kind of pass through to prices. The Fed's got to be a little bit worried about that stuff. So I think, you know, even though there are obviously a lot of downside risks here, we've seen, you know, risk markets clearly taking those on board. All of the sentiment indicators, you know, sentiment surveys and such have really shown a decline in the outlook for the U.S. I think the Fed's watching that stuff, but this inflation problem is really kind of handcuffing them a bit. The other thing I would say is that I do think, you know, maybe behind closed doors, or maybe they're not as vocal about it, but I think there is something to an argument that New York Fed President Dudley made back in 2019, which is that the Fed's probably a bit wary of kind of encouraging or cleaning up the mess from bad trade policy. And I think they may be a little bit wary of doing something that will take some of the pressure off of the administration to change those. Now, I know you're getting into some very, very dangerous territory with Fed independence here, which is, you know, partially why I say this happens behind closed doors. But I do think, at least initially, there has to be some thinking at the Fed that we don't want to rush right in and make things easier to maintain these kind of problematic trade policies, and if anything, maybe even encourage more bad trade policy in the future. So I think that's kind of guiding them in the near term. But I do think as we move in to the latter part of this year, if these tariffs stick to any kind of degree, and also I would say just the uncertainty that's been unleashed by the tariffs. So even if you get some rollback, all the uncertainty that's already been injected into the economy, you know, along with potential wealth effects coming from decline in equities, et cetera, I think by the end of this year, the data is going to start to, you know, the growth and labor market data is going to start to evolve in a way that the Fed really can't put off cuts any longer. So I do think we're probably looking at some cuts later this year.
Got it. And I think tying into that, because some people have been taken aback a little bit by the Treasury sell-off we've seen in recent days, counterintuitive to the worsening growth outlook, but there are a lot of questions about what is driving that. A lot of people mentioning the possibility of foreign central banks selling treasuries. Do you put any weight on these arguments?
It's hard not to at this point. I think you almost kind of default to this where there's smoke, there's fire type of idea. The amount of discussion that we've seen over the past few days about foreign banks selling, this is usually kind of with a mindset that there is some kind of retaliatory type of action going on here from very large central bank. Obviously China is the one that is discussed, just given the size of treasury holdings that they have, that maybe it's a way to kind of strike back at the administration. We haven't typically seen, we typically haven't seen that in the past. During the trade war during Trump's prior administration, we didn't see clear evidence that, you know, China was really utilizing their treasury holdings to kind of put pressure on the administration to lighten up. But, you know, that being said, this is a bit different. I mean, these tariffs are obviously a lot more extreme than what we saw during the last trade war. And also, the administration has very clearly stated that they care a lot about where yields are. They're really looking at 10-year yields. And so maybe that's seen as more of a pressure point this time around. So I still think a lot of what we're seeing is really just related more to some of the volatility, you know, the volatility we saw in risk markets bleeding over into treasuries. And then that initial VAR shock in treasuries turning into more of a deleveraging event for, you know, basis and spread positions, you know, in the treasury space. So I think that is probably what's driving things more than necessarily foreign asset sales, foreign central banks kind of dumping treasuries. But at least the fear of that, even if it's not occurring, the fear of that is enough to think, I think, to really kind of exaggerate the moves we've seen this week. So, any potential kind of dip buyer on these, or anybody who might be thinking about fading the sharp decline we've seen in swap spreads or these moves in basis, you know, even if they're kind of thinking about the possibility that, you know, China's in there selling treasuries, that's probably exaggerating the moves that we've seen. So it almost gets to a point where it doesn't even matter if those flows are occurring or not to some degree, if people are worried about them and behaving as if China is in there selling treasuries. So certainly something we're watching. I think what we can say now is that that kind of initial concern about foreign central bank selling has now, like I said, turned into more of a deleveraging event. And that's really where, you know, the focus has kind of shifted to the more mechanical aspects of those basis trades and spread trades than, you know, what foreign central banks are doing.
Elster, if I can use that opportunity, they were speaking about sort of foreign sellers and pivot to the FX market. So in the last few days, we have seen huge moves in equities, fixed income, commodities. But in FX, the moves have been relatively small. What's going on?
So actually today, we are seeing pretty big moves again, but it's certainly true in recent days, there have been moments where equity markets, fixed income markets, as you say, have been moving wildly, and FX has not been moving much at all. And part of it, I think, reflects the uncertainty and lack of conviction around what's going on. And actually, FX had been relatively lightly positioned heading into this. So while you're seeing a wiping out of positioning in other asset classes, you haven't really had the same pressure for investors to unwind big long dollar positions, for example, or big short something else. That had already happened to a large degree heading into this. And so we actually went into this a lot more neutral across the FX market.
So Elsa, you have to cut me a little slack here. I'm a simple rates guy. My view on kind of the FX stuff is always very simplistic. And I always thought, you know, tariffs, dollar positive. And it seemed like that was the view heading into this. But now that seems to be kind of shifting. I'm not really sure if that kind of more traditional view of how this is supposed to work is really consensus now. So what are you kind of thinking on what this means overall for the dollar?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Because initially it was thought that this may be dollar positive, and some of the calls for parity that were out there at the start of the year were based in part on a view that we would get aggressive tariffs. And yet it very quickly flipped to trade this as an end to US exceptionalism. And that is very dollar negative. That said, doubts have started to creep in again, in part due to the things you were talking about earlier, Blake. You know, we're trying to estimate the broader hit to global growth, because clearly it's not just a hit to US growth. There are knock-on impacts on the rest of the world. And if the most damaging impact is via sentiment, this extreme uncertainty, which creates a negative backdrop both for investment and consumption, then it becomes a relative story for FX. Clearly, the US is the eye of the storm, imposing simultaneous tariffs on all of its trading partners. But at the same time, in the US, you also have more of an inflationary impact. You know, we had ECB Governing Council member Centeno just earlier today saying the inflationary impact for the euro area is ambiguous. And you can see why. You know, the US is imposing tariffs, extreme tariffs on China. Those Chinese goods are going to be looking to find a home elsewhere. How does that play out in terms of the inflationary impact in the euro area? Likely disinflationary. On top of that, the euro area was already on track in their eyes, in the ECB's eyes, that is, to hit its inflation target. And so rates were already lower. And that inability for the Fed to aggressively cut rates very quickly marks this as pretty different to the last crisis we went through, which was COVID 2020. Now, at the time, the US was also the highest yield or one of the highest yielders in G10. It aggressively cut rates to zero. That created a huge wave of dollar selling as foreign investors put hedges back on their US assets. That's not necessarily going to happen this time. So what you're left with is you've got, yes, the end of US exceptionalism, yes, the hit to US growth, but not necessarily the direct compression in front-end yield differentials. The second argument is around rotation from US assets to foreign assets, in particular European assets. And that appears to be happening to some degree, but perhaps not to the extent that people might think. And then finally, you've got the question marks around what's going to be the policy response in the rest of the world. You know, do we see major fiscal stimulus out of China? Because that will have a knock-on impact on countries with a higher beta to Chinese growth. There is certainly a view that euro dollar goes a lot higher from here. We've heard calls between 115 and 120. But there is a risk that actually those headwinds make it all take longer to play out.
Elsa, if I can jump in here, you've mentioned Europe and euro dollar specifically now a few times. And obviously for me, that's crucial what's going on there. If I'm not mistaken, we're up now, euro dollar, about 7% since the start of March. And you've been highlighting that most of the move has been playing out over 48 hours. Would you mind sort of digging in a bit? So what exactly can we learn from this takeaway?
So yeah, as you say, Peter, we're up over 7% since the start of March, which is a pretty decent move. We were at 104 on the first trading day of March. We're sitting at 110.50 now. But almost 5% of that move has happened in just 48 hours. The 30 hours following the German fiscal announcement on March 4th, 5th, and the 18 hours following Trump's initial tariff announcement. Why do I highlight that? Because there's been a narrative in the market, as I just mentioned, that there is a rotation going on out of US assets into European assets. And when we talk about that rotation, what I think people really have in their minds is a kind of structural asset reallocation, reversing some of the very long-term capital flows that we've seen over the last, not just 2-3 years, but really 10 to 15 years that Europe's been running a current account surplus. And that may well happen, but it's very unlikely to have happened in the space of 48 hours. So what can you take away from that? Well, it really depends on your bias. I mean, European equities quite persistently outperformed the US from December through March. But then since hitting a low in mid-March, that gap has gone into reverse. And actually, more recently, in the last, you know, 5 trading days, for example, European-US equities are really somewhat on a par. If you think going forward that European equity outperformance returns, or if you think that geopolitical factors enter into the equation and just generally there's going to be a rotation away from US assets, then you really should be expecting a much bigger move higher potentially in Eurodollar, because what we've seen so far has not really been that. That said, in my own skepticism would be that, you know, yes, some of that could happen, but I suspect it will play out on a slower time horizon than perhaps people would like. The fact is that this is not a pure US growth shock. It is a global growth shock. It is going to impact Europe as well. It's certainly going to have a massive impact on China, and Europe still has a higher beta than the US to Chinese growth. So I suspect it will act as a bit of a headwind, potentially, to the euro dollar move. I do still see us getting initially to 112 and then the longer run, you know, up to 120, but over a longer time horizon. And a lot of that, as I said earlier, will depend critically on the ability of the Fed to cut rates aggressively. That may not come until further in the year or even 2026. So, Peter, let me turn the tables on you, and returning to the theme that the cat is out of the bag. We now know that the tariffs are going to be 20% on the EU and 10% on the UK. Do we have any magnitude in mind for what this implies for the respective economies?
Yeah, thank you, Elsa. It's a question I get a lot. And obviously, given sort of the market moves, it's not that straightforward a question. So let me answer with the things that I think we can say with a relatively high degree of certainty. So the UK impact is almost certainly going to be smaller than the impact on the EU. The main reason is, the tariffs are a bit lower. Secondly, though, the trading relationship of the UK with the US is just smaller. So the impact or the part of the economy that's impacted is much smaller. And in fact, in the UK, the much bigger trade takes place in services, just because the UK is much more service-based economy. So that I think we can say with relatively certainty. Secondly, from what we are seeing at the moment is that the UK is much less willing, for instance, to retaliate, and we can come back to that topic in a second. But therefore, I think any impact that might come from a secondary response should also be estimated to be smaller. But that's not really sort of where the buck stops, because when you look at sort of the first line impact, if we just assess what that might mean, we can even use some official estimates. So the OBR, for instance, saying the first year for the UK, that might be something like 0.3. Lagarde has been saying, the ECB has been saying something of that magnitude, maybe a little bit more for the euro area as well. But then, of course, that's just the first line impact. I think the other two or maybe three factors we should consider. One is, what happens if there is going to be retaliation? And the EU, just today announced some small retaliation on the steel and aluminium, but they're also contemplating what else they're going to do. So, and if they were to go there, I think we would also have to see what the response from Washington is, because if it were to go into a spiral like it happened with China, the impact is obviously going to be much larger. If it is just a one-off retaliation, more like in the case of Canada, and then that's it, and then it is smaller, but we don't know that yet. So, but that's a potential negative. And then just the European economies, they've got a very large trade relationship with the rest of the world. So if we're heading into a global downswing, that's negative as well. So if I work from a baseline of about maybe 0.3, I would say we'd probably end up at a 0.4, 0.5. But then there is a small positive that counterbalances that, or one small and one big positive. The smaller one is that we had a significant reduction in energy prices, and the European economies are by and large all energy importers. So you probably shave some of that negative effect off again. So I think out of all of this, we probably should be estimating a reduction to where we were before in growth for this year, maybe for, let's say, by 0.4. And maybe a little bit less by for 2026. Now, the last thing, and I think we covered this on a previous podcast, of course, is that juxtaposed against that is the fiscal expansion that we're going to see. So overall, I think it's quite unlikely in my mind that the euro area, for instance, would fall into a recession. And even for the UK, where we don't have the fiscal response or the fiscal leeway for response, I think it seems unlikely to me that we're going to fall into a recession unless the whole situation spirals much, much further beyond what we're seeing at the moment. But clearly, it's growth dampening at this stage.
So you kind of mentioned potential responses here. We've kind of seen from other counterparties, you know, Canada, China, you know, varying kind of strategies in dealing with these, whether it's strong retaliation or kind of coming to the table offering, you know, some kind of concession or bringing a quote unquote deal to Trump. So Peter, how are you kind of thinking about the responses on, you know, on the European side or even the UK side?
Yeah, thanks, Blake. I'll start with the UK because that's quite easy. I think they'll probably do nothing for the time being, and they just wait until the dust settles a bit. I mean, they try to have a very good relationship with Trump. As I was mentioning earlier, the impact on the economy is probably not as big. So I think they'll probably try to do as little as possible. Now, for the EU, it looks very different. So what I've said to clients before is that I think the Europeans would probably follow a four-pronged approach. So one is, as we've seen now with the steel and aluminium, some tit-for-tat retaliation on goods. They've done this before. They know how it works. They will probably do it again. The second thing is that, as you say, they have been negotiating or try to negotiate, and they will probably try to do that again. There is talk that they've already offered a zero tariff regime on both sides for industrial goods. They have they're said to have offered to lower tariffs on cars, for instance. And so far, the response seems to be from Washington, just not good enough. You know, but they will keep trying that path as well. But then I think they will also wield a pretty big stick. And the biggest stick I think that the European unions have is the so-called ACI, the anti-coercion instrument. And that's a pretty broad, it doesn't roll off the tongue very very easily, but it's a broad measure that they can use where they essentially could bar foreign firms partially or totally from accessing the European markets. And they have said that they would look at deploying this tool to either the US tech firms or maybe even to the financial firms. And that, of course, in my mind, would be the biggest escalation that we could see, maybe even going beyond what we're seeing with China at the moment, because that would broaden the discussion from just goods to services. And of course, the US has a trade surplus with the EU on services. So that could potentially really put the cat amongst the pigeons from that point of view. And then very last but not least, and they have also said that they would do something that I think the Canadians have also said that they want to deploy, where if they were to raise any further funds from additional tariffs, for instance, that they would start using that to support the companies that are being targeted by the US. And that, of course, is also a strong intervention in how the economy works. So, but for the time being, they've actually been relatively shy in going out and doing something firm. But I think all of these things are on the table, and I think this is really for markets. I think this is going to be one of the big next shoes to drop in my mind.
So, Peter, I mentioned kind of earlier a more kind of direct impact on markets and some market volatility we're seeing in the aftermath of these tariff announcements. things have been pretty volatile on your side as well. So I guess, you know, any kind of observations, initial thoughts on the market piece of it, the market response to these tariffs?
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that's very clear is that the front end is sort of the place to be. We have seen a very significant increase in expectations of what the central banks will do, both at the Bank of England as well as for the ECB. We're now forecasting an ECB terminal rate that's below 175, where the ECB says neutral, the lower end of neutral is. So it's a very clear bid for the front end. Now, the other thing, however, is that what we're also seeing is that bunds in particular seem to be holding up much better than either treasuries or gilts. Now, that is obviously sort of the reverse reaction to what we've seen a couple of weeks ago when the German fiscal statement came out. I think this probably goes to the point that we have a better fiscal backdrop in these markets. And there's probably also less pressure to sell that from anyone out there. Because the positions are probably not as lopsided as in some of the other markets. And then maybe thirdly, and that's probably the point where I'll close, because that brings us full circle also to where we started. I mean, particularly in the sterling market, the 30-year part of the curve, that's under quite a bit of pressure. But also in the euro market, we're seeing that the curve is steepening. And that's obviously a theme we've been running with for quite a while, and that's been accentuated now. So I think that's definitely another one that we're seeing. And then just maybe a final point that I don't think we necessarily have to dig really deep in, but given the credit spread widening that we've seen a little bit of fallout on the intra-euro spreads, and that obviously raises the specter of years gone by. But I don't think that's necessarily something that will really cause markets to worry in the next couple of weeks. But that's definitely something to at least keep an eye on. So there's quite a few trends that are emerging here, I would say. I think we close it here. Thank you, Elsa. Thank you, Blake. I think it was fascinating. Plenty to talk about. I'm pretty sure there will be plenty to talk about in future episodes. So with that, I thank everyone for listening and hope that you tune again next time.
Thank you, everyone, for joining this episode. If you have further questions, you can reach out to us directly or via your sales coverage or visit RBC Insight to read our content.
This content is based on information available at the time it was recorded and is for informational purposes only. It is not an offer to buy or sell or a solicitation, and no recommendations are implied. It is outside the scope of this communication to consider whether it is suitable for you and your financial objectives.